Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's I, Len Testa, and today we're recording live from Disney's Fort Wilderness Campgrounds. And we're doing it at night. Why? So it's spooky, because on today's episode, we're going to be talking about ghosts. More specifically, ghosts in Mickey's not-so-scary Halloween party. And to tell these stories is the old spooktacular man himself, Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Very well. Very well. It's very scary.
So, Jim, so not the history of not-so-scary Halloween party. Halloween's been, goes back hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Disney World goes back 40-something. Mm-hmm. What prompted them? What was the history of Halloween? Because Disney opened October 1st, right?
Right.
Of 1971. Mm-hmm. A month later, there was Halloween. Was it something they did right out of the gate?
Actually, no. What got kind of interesting is that it took them a while to really get in the Halloween business. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, when October 31st would show up, you'd go to the resort and somebody may have put a little pumpkin on the check-in desk, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But they really didn't get going with this. In fact, you know, the first time you can find photos of characters dressed, and I say the term dressed loosely.
Dressed.
Is 77, when they have this great publicity shot of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs walking down Main Street, USA, holding up sort of carnival masks.
Just little black plastic things?
Yeah, on a stick. And it was just, it was for trick-or-treating in the park that day, and that was it.
On the 31st?
Yep.
It was a random Tuesday in October.
Huh. And, you know, that's what's weird about this is that, you know, if you drill down into it, the history of the Disney theme parks actually hinge on Halloween.
Really?
Yep. Turns out that, one of the biggest Halloween festivals in the country actually started in 1924.
There are Halloween festivals?
All right, go ahead. Halloween festivals.
Right, okay, I'll take your word for it. All right.
Was held in Anaheim, California.
Okay.
All right. And Walt Disney's in the middle of the land search for Disneyland, and the first couple of sites he's gone after have fallen out.
Okay.
And it's one of these things where they're going, you know, there's a lot of land out toward Garden Grove in Anaheim, and mm-hmm. Anaheim has this Halloween festival, and why don't we offer to build a float, and why don't we offer to bring in some characters?
Oh.
And so Walt actually uses the whole thing as kind of a torpedo operation. He goes in, he meets the city fathers in Anaheim, he gets to know who's powerful. This is 53.
Oh, so he's like, my name is Walt, nice to meet you.
Yeah, and so
who here makes the decisions?
That's it, exactly. And so by the time 54 rolls around and he's bought the land and they announce, he's got it wired. But none of that would have happened if Walt hadn't volunteered to do, bring the company and its assets into that year's, Halloween festival.
No.
Nice. But at the same time, Disneyland, again, didn't really get into trick-or-treating or that sort of thing. It was kind of on and off. I mean, Don DeForge's sons, he ran the Silver Banjo restaurant in the park for the first couple of years. And
where was the Silver Banjo?
It was in Frontierland.
Makes sense.
And they talk about how just one day, Walt called his dad and said, "Hey, we're trick-or-treating tonight.
Come on over.
Need
to give you some candy."
So Don drove his kids out, and sure enough, they go, walking up, Main Street USA in broad daylight. With like pillowcases going from store to store to store to store with Walt.
Really?
And it's like, the Forge kids said, what was great is like, that you'd walk in and, that they'd, the employee would give you like a piece of candy. They'd see Walt standing directly behind him. It's like, well, here you go, giant wads of candy. So, the weird thing is that those early years of the park, you may remember hearing the stories about the spectacular failure of the Mickey Mouse Club Circus, where actually ended with a Christmas presentation of the park. And Walt eventually realized, people aren't really coming here for the holidays. Mm-hmm. Every day at Disneyland is a holiday. And so the guys who went to Walt Disney World and built the place, mm-hmm. It was good enough for Walt, it was good enough for us. But the weird thing of it is Disneyland opens in 19—Walt Disney World opens in 71. Mm-hmm. They do start rolling out stuff I mean, candlelight procession started in 71. Mm-hmm. You had your first Easter.
Really? Where did they have it in 71?
71 was on Main Street. Rock Hudson himself came out and stood in front of the train. I mean, it was the same setup that they did in Disneyland. Mm-hmm. In 72, the first Easter parade. What happened to sort of change this whole thing was in October of 72, Knott's Berry Farm, for the first time ever, had its Not Scary Farm. And that changed the
theme. That's nothing, a little competition to inspire.
No, that's exactly.
The creative juices of Walt Disney.
But even then, it took them till 96 to get serious about it.
Wow. So 20-some years.
Yeah. I mean, mind you, if you drill down into Disney company history, you'll find things like they had, a summer where it was, or a year where it was All-Star Spectacular, where each of the holidays, whether it was Labor Day or Memorial Day and Halloween, all of them had big concert events. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of Whitney Houston's earliest gigs was appearing at an 80s concert. Really? In front of the Magic Kingdom and on a Halloween event.
Wow.
But it was all this kind of hit and miss thing. It was all this stuff where they never quite got serious. Now, meanwhile, it's not Disney being innovative. It's Disney responding to what's going on in the marketplace.
Right.
You have places like Knott's doing events. You also have, there's this great article from 1986 about people recognizing that Halloween is suddenly becoming this giant retail holiday.
That's right.
For adults.
And yeah, it's huge now, yeah.
Yeah, and this was the thing. It was just, so Disney, being Disney, keeps eyeballing the trends, and it's like, wow, that's doing well. We should maybe consider doing something about that. And then it just gets bizarre, because they do their very first Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party in 1990. Only two nights.
So the Christmas party predates the Halloween party?
Yep.
Okay. And what year? 1990?
1990.
Okay.
And, just the notion of it's a Christmas party. It's something special. We're only doing two of them.
When were the nights? What days?
Oh.
Was it like early or late December?
It was actually, I want to say around the 9th or the 10th. I mean, it was sort of placed, in what used to be a dead zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not till 96 that they do the first, not-so-scary. And even then, it's only for two nights.
Okay.
And
how did it go over?
It went over very well. But this is where it gets strange, because for the longest time, they resisted expanding it. You can actually, if you walk through all of those years and you look at how Mickey's Very Merry bumps out from 2 to 3 to 4, and they kept
to 17.
Yeah. But this was the thing. Eventually, starting at about 98, 99, yeah, they're like, all right, look, there's demand.
Yeah.
Let's start bumping it out. And nowadays, what's really crazy is that, there have been years in the relatively recently where we had more nights of Mickey's Not So Scary than we had for Very Merry.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
it starts, the first one starts September 10th this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about this the other night, about, well, why is that? And I think you had the most interesting theory that, it's the better party.
Yeah, because you can, because Halloween, you can be scary, you can be comedic, mm-hmm, you could play it straight and celebrate it. Christmas, you have to play it straight. There are no villains at Christmas. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Scrooge, but,
yep,
there's no goofing around, there's mm-hmm no zombie Christmas thing. You're never going to see a zombie Christmas float. You're never going to see anything other than here are the carols, here's the traditions, go.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, just an interesting sideline here. The one place that, even when the parks weren't doing Halloween, the one place, mm-hmm, starting in 76, where you can actually find a really decent Halloween celebration on property, and it was free, was over at the Shopping Village.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was, but again, totally mercenary reasons. The notion was that, please come. Buy crap. And it was like, and
we'll give you chocolate.
Yeah, and that's what it broke down to. And in fact, my favorite year, you can go on YouTube and actually watch this footage.
Okay.
It's the year before Universal Studios opens in Florida.
Okay.
And so as you watch this footage of the employees at the Disney Shopping Village dressed up for Halloween, mm-hmm, and it's every, to a man, they're doing Universal characters. It's the werewolf. Dracula, it's Frankenstein's monsters. It's Dracula. It's the Phantom of the Opera. And they're all there. And it just is one of these things where, you know, hello, Disney Legal. It's like, you know.
Dear sirs. Yes. Come to our attention that you are using.
Yeah. And but again, you know, just it gets out there. But they did it for that 1 year before they came in.
Oh, funny.
And, of course, Universal. And again, let's not be too, you know, I mean, you got to be obvious about this. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that did drive Disney to get into the Halloween business was the fact that Universal Studios event, you know, Halloween Horror Nights.
Oh, that's right. This is, what, 23rd or yep. 24th? So they've been doing it since, what, 90?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time.
Yeah, and yeah. It was just one of these things where Disney watched the Center of Gravity and Orlando shift for a couple of weeks, and it was
So the interesting thing about the Halloween Horror Nights is it's more adult. I mean, they allow drinking in the parks, and it's even actually known they have, like, a detox tank or something stationed behind that. They, honestly, God, they have, like, the drunk tanks.
Yeah, behind. They have to.
So when Disney decides to do the not-so-scary, mm-hmm. what's the plan for it? Is it, you know, we're going to go out and do 17 at once with the parade and the fireworks? Or no, again, how does it start?
It was a relatively modest, you know, affair.
When did it become a hard ticket event?
Oh, God. 96 was the get-go on hard ticket.
Okay.
But at the same time, it was only $18, $19, and it was actually... what's fascinating is you can watch... Over the years, the perception changed within Disney. That the
$18 or $19. That's yeah. adorable.
Well, that coupled with the fact that, you know, it was always $4 or $5 less than Mickey's Very Merry.
Right, I remember that. Yeah,
and it was just because the whole notion is like, well, you know, it's not as popular a holiday, and you know, just uh-huh. you know, and people really want the the holiday festivities, and it just. And over time, it was like, look at the demand. Yeah. I mean, look what's going on here. And you can actually watch the price, you know, slowly creep up to the exact same price point. Mm-hmm. In fact, there have been years where it's, you know, particularly if you're buying day of, it's more expensive to buy Mickey's.
Really?
Yeah.
More demand.
Yep.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you face situations like this, it's like, okay, how are we going to deliver on this? Yeah. You know, what are we going to do? And then you saw these amazing traditions leap up, like the run of the Headless Horseman.
That's fantastic. So this is where does he start, in Frontierland?
Yeah, he will actually start. What's interesting is they have him actually come out the gate by Splash Mountain.
Yeah,
he does the entire parade route.
Yeah,
but it's one of the
backwards.
Huge black Percherons. That, yeah. It, in fact, you know, ties to Disney history. When they had the 25th anniversary here, they had a restored Calliope that these monstrous horses, mm-hmm. you know, brought through, you know, the park because it was so heavy. And they've since kept them at the ranch. And every year they bring them out. And in a weird sort of way, this is what's great about this is that, well, first of all, obviously you have... You know, the influence on the Haunted Mansion there is you know, the Terrytown, New York feel, yeah. And you know, you even have the Little Sleepy Hollow, you know, refreshment stand mm-hmm. there. But what's really great about bringing the Headless Horseman into the mix here is that if you go back to the early iterations of the Haunted Mansion, the mm-hmm. finale of the attraction, and this was when it was a walkthrough, okay. was you were supposed to be in a room where you watch the Headless Horseman ride up, you know, across, you know, you're looking at windows mm-hmm. and watching this, you know, this phantom on a steed. Yeah. It was great. So it's nice that they reached out. That said, they've had some issues. Ooh. Well, again, it's a live animal, typically.
Oh, yeah.
And they're running this thing 20-some-odd nights a year now.
Yeah.
And just in the last year or so, they actually had a run of the Headless Horseman where the horse fell down.
Oh, because it's a shoed horse.
Yep.
But the streets are kind of slick sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean,
was the horse okay?
Yeah, well, you know.
Was the rider okay?
In both cases, it's one of these things where you've got somebody, you know, one of the reasons when you're watching the Headless Horseman and the ride seems kind of underpowered is like the poor man is looking out through the you know, the neck yeah. and holding up a pumpkin.
Yeah. His mind is otherwise occupied.
That's right.
So, on a horse.
You know, he wasn't moving terribly fast, and neither was the horse, but even so, it yeah. was very disturbing for the people to watch this.
Yeah.
But yeah, now, what's fascinating now is that this has become such a cash cow for the company, and so it's so huge.
Think about it, right? So so Halloween's on the 31st, but they're doing one afterwards.
Yep.
Right. So they're doing one on the 2nd, or on the 1st. Then there's and it starts on the 10th. So it's 52 days.
Yep.
1/7 of the year.
Yeah.
Is Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
1/7. It's like saying every day this year, Sunday, we're gonna celebrate Halloween.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is the last three or four of each year sell out.
Yeah.
You know, just go completely clean.
Yeah, the Tuesdays, like, we did a blog post on this, and, you know, the Tuesday ones in September, the first few, you know, not that credit. I mean, but they're getting their bearings. They're we're going to bring in the decorations. We're going to be,
And where this gets interesting is we're kind of facing a situation where Disney eyeballs that those three or four days per year where it sells out, and it's like, we could do a second event. We could do another one of these. And
at another park?
Yeah.
And interesting.
The plan has always been the studios. In fact, there was
one. Really? What an odd coincidence.
Yeah. Huh. And there was at least one iteration of this. It was just basically a Tim Burton celebration. It was going to be, in fact, the last site plan I saw for this had Frank and Weenie, Nightmare Before Christmas, and the Alice in Wonderland characters, basically take over the park. And, you know, Disney could never really turn the key on it, because Mr. Burton, frankly, is, you know, he's very controlling of his characters, and he had to be on board, particularly because they were going to use the marketing name. So they've kind of diverted to something else, in just a couple of days here, they're going to be doing the Unleash the Villains event.
That's right, yeah. And so, again, you have to play Christmas straight.
Yep.
But you could do a villains thing at the studios with Halloween.
So this is kind of a proof of confidence.
I totally thought it was when they announced it.
So, now, mind you, with all the construction that's supposedly going on there over the next 2-3 years, the Star Wars stuff, it could be a challenge. But on the other side of that, we should be ready for... There might be a week out of the year where you could come down here, and if you're a true Halloween fiend, you could do
both.
Two Disney events.
Nice. So. People actually just start coming down and just staying for that.
Yep. So
that's fantastic.
But anyway, that brings us up to where we are today, and alone in the dark.
Light so I can see the top of my camera.
All right. So for Jim, this is Len. Thanks very much for listening to this episode. Oh, Jim, real quick, before we go, there's a little bonus episode. Are there any ghosts in Walt Disney World?
Well, if you want to...
I hear the story of George in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, yes. As the story goes, and it's interesting because you can't... If you actually drill down into it, there is... You know, I mean, face it, this is the kind of unseemly underside of Walt Disney World. It's the size of a city, and every day in cities around the world, people die. You know, whether it's, they die in...
Some under mysterious circumstances.
And the case of, Pirates of the Caribbean, the cast members who work there swear by George. That, in fact, that it's become part of the closing procedure of the attraction. When you say goodbye to George, you say goodnight, George. Because if you don't say goodnight, the next morning when you come in, bad things have happened. Whether it's, boats have derailed or you have a bad day. And it's like, it has become a superstition among the cast members there. It's like, you have to acknowledge George.
It's a true story. I was one time in the Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Everyone runs to Space Mountain.
Yep.
I ran to Pirates of the Caribbean. I was the first person on.
Ooh.
And I go through, and none of the effects were working in the city scene. So all the lights were off. Nothing.
Yep.
So I tell the cast member when I got off. And he's like, oh, okay, we forgot to wake up George. And that's when I was like, oh, really? Interesting story.
There we go. Good night and good morning.
All right, for Jim, this is Len. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast. If you please rate us on iTunes and let us know what other episodes you'd like to hear. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.